You're listening to Let's Talk, a bi-weekly supplement to our regular podcast because you watched We Talk Movies, Films and Cinema, or whatever we're obsessed with at the moment. As always, I'm Charlie.
And I'm Francesco.
Francesco, let's talk. Hello, welcome to Let's Talk. We're not let's talking about any particular obsession, but we are going to be let's talking, I'm going to stop that right now, about what every movie nerd is thinking about on Monday, 13th of March. And what is that?
Thinking about a bit of everything, I would say.
And where are you thinking about it?
Everywhere.
And when did you think about it?
Right now, actually.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's a few days later when you're listening to this, because we recorded this on a Monday, and hopefully, this is coming out on Thursday, because relevance. All right, so we're going to be talking about last night's Academy Awards, or if you're nasty, the Oscars. They were hosted by Mr. Jimmy Kimmel.
For the however many times?
It's the third time. I think he was pretty good.
Okay.
And there were no shenanigans, not just like last year, but also it wasn't overly gimmicky. Like, it just, do you like films? Okay, these people made some films. Here are some awards.
Good.
And they brought back the television coverage of the technical awards, which we should note is good on them, but it's crazy that they did it in the first place. By and large, it seemed like a pretty tight ceremony.
Okay, good. Should we talk about all of the film that won?
Yes, I think we should.
All of the movie that won the awards.
Everything Everywhere All at Once won a whopping 7 awards.
7, yeah.
Followed not so closely by All Quiet on the Western Front that won 4, and The Whale that won 2.
So, everything else only won 1.
Yeah, literally all at once.
Literally, well, some of them won nothing.
So why don't we just go up from Best Visual Effects and work our way to Best Picture?
Well, that's the way to do it.
Best Visual Effects, Avatar The Way of Water won.
Banger.
Fair enough.
The water, the ocean, the fish,
there is so much water.
Sea.
The nauseating frame rate. We love to see it.
I was underwater for 3 hours.
We've not really talked about Avatar The Way of Water. Did you like it?
I was underwater for 3 hours. I will never watch that movie on my laptop because it will make me hate it. I love the experience of watching it on the big screen. I was like a baby with a lava lamp in front of them.
Yeah, I think that there wasn't really any real competition for The Way of Water or Quiet on the Western Front. Like, it did a lot of scene filling, but the achievements of Avatar The Way of Water to create fully, you know, rendered people and species and settings was extremely impressive. What I will say about Avatar The Way of Water is that because of the type of film it is, you're thinking about how good the visual effects are rather than wondering if they're visual effects at all. And I think Top Gun Maverick at times made you forget that you were watching some bits that were definitely fake.
That's my only hang-up about this win. It's that visual effects normally goes to largely live-action films with visual effects embedded into them. Avatar The Way of Water is an animated film through and through.
Well, this is what we've talked about. We'll talk a bit more about that when we get to Best Animated Film. Mm-hmm. But I think for it being nominated in this category and the parameters of this category as they stand, it deserved to win.
I think this category is about to get really boring because they're making 3 more of these, and if they all look the same, they're all just going to win for the next 3 years.
Yeah, so it'll be like Best Animated Film when Pixar wins everything.
Exactly.
Best editing, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Great editing.
Yeah, very good. One of the things that deserves to win in that film.
Like, not only cutting, but the use of slow-mo, the use of montages, the use of match cutting. The pacing of the film is, like, so well kept by the editing. No complaints there.
Yeah, and the switching into all the multiple different, you know, styles and genres.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that feels so lived in, but you see it for like half a second, I really enjoy. Which is also a production design thing, but the way that the editing has that discipline, I really
yeah,
like.
Yeah, and you know, the effort in color grading to keep everything together and not make it clash too much. There's a lot there.
In the tradition that we just started of Best Visual Effects, who else really impressed you that didn't win in editing?
I mean, Elvis, there's an argument to be made, but
it's the same argument as Everything Everywhere.
Yeah, and I think Everything Everywhere it's in service of a better narrative. And
I agree. And also, yeah. I don't know if you can give a best editing award to a 3-hour movie. But there is some really good editing, very flashy editing and fun editing in Elvis. So yeah.
It's not like everything ever is that short.
No, but it's not Elvis long.
No. And Top Gun Maverick was also some really good editing there as well. But I do think that Everything Everywhere is the most creative editing of the three.
Best costume design, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Ruthie Carter winning her second Oscar for the Black Panther series. Mm-hmm. Should also say, in retrospect, the best film editing was Paul Rogers for Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Joe Leteri, Richard Bainham, Eric Sandin, and Daniel Barrett for Avatar The Way of Water. Mm-hmm. So just want to get into the habit of doing that, because sometimes you forget.
Because they need their boost.
Well, yeah, from us.
They need our shout out. So I guess my question would be, I haven't seen Wakanda Forever. Are most costumes in Marvel movies CGI?
Not in the Black Panther movies.
Okay.
So we said this actually on a Black Panther episode, is there is a huge difference between Chadwick Boseman's costume in Civil War, where it is all CGI, and his costume in Black Panther.
And also and the weakest all parts, the other costumes of all the other tribes in Black Panther, that's right.
And the weakest parts visually also correlate to when the costumes are CGI in the first Black Panther film.
Good.
But there is also some ropey CGI costumes in Wakanda Forever, so moving on.
Nice things.
Exactly. Best makeup and hairstyling, The Whale, because there was a fat suit.
They made Brendan Fraser look ugly, and that's an achievement.
Adrian Morat, Judy Chin, and Anne-Marie Bradley. If I'm mispronouncing Adrian Morat's name, if it's pronounced Morrow, I'm sorry.
And you won an Oscar, so don't complain.
Exactly. At least it's spelled correctly on your gold man. So, yeah, you've not seen The Whale, have you?
I have not. I'm going to have to watch it because we're going to do our The Mummy episode, I presume sooner than we expected since Brendan Fraser won. But no, I heard bad opinions about it. I'm not eager to watch it, but I have no opinions of my own.
By the way, someone pointed out yesterday, it's not Brendan Fraser, it's Brendan Fraser.
Fraser, that's right.
And you can get away with it because you're foreign. I can't. Well, I actually knew it was Brendan Fraser because he talks about Brendan Fraser as a separate person to his character in the film Looney Tunes Back in Action.
I'm a stuntman!
Ha! You a stuntman? Please!
I am! Did you see those Mummy movies? I'm in them more than Brendan Fraser is.
I just say Fraser because I'm thinking about the show.
Which, of course, he's in. It's about him.
He's Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah.
Just spelled with an A, so... Yeah,
he's a chameleon. So, yeah, The Whale, I mean, you've seen a lot of the stuff that's achieved in The Whale. I don't think it's a bad choice to give it to The Whale. My only issue, if I have an issue, is that it does feel like since Darkest Hour, this award has pretty much gone to whoever can make the most realistic body augmentations.
And yet the Batman didn't win.
Yeah, but I think The Whale is bigger than a penguin.
But it does seem to be the award, for the best makeup and hairstyling, fat suit, whatever, on one actor, whereas it used to be the entire ensemble cast that was in makeup and wigs.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert on this category, but it's kind of like what you said about best visual effects getting kind of boring. Mm. This is my problem, because, like, hairstyling, first of all, makeup and hairstyling, two very different crafts, and I think the hairstyling in Elvis is extremely good. Yes, that's mostly on one actor, but his hair looks very good in that film. So I guess that would be my runner-up.
Well, they made him look just like Elvis.
Yeah, that's
where they also made him sound like Elvis. How'd they do that?
Well, that wasn't makeup and hairstyling.
Was it not?
That was just necromancy.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, also worth pointing out, Brendan Fraser looked nothing like a whale.
Well, I was wondering, like, is it called a whale because it's fat? But no, apparently it's called The Whale because it's a Moby Dick allegory.
Yeah, there is Moby Dick. It's not really an analogy of the film itself, but it's used as a motif throughout the film. Yeah, so The Whale, sure. That's my reaction to that award. Okay.
Well, it put it into the multi-award winners roster, so there you go.
And yeah, and apparently Judy Chin is lovely and was Rachel Zegler's makeup and hair person on West Side Story.
Okay, she deserves it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also saw the George Lucas talk show live stream where Rachel Zegler was on it, and she's like, oh, Judy Chin, I know her!
Well, she's got her thumbs of approval.
Yeah. Best cinematography, All Quiet on the Western Front, James Friend. What do you think?
From what I heard, it's an outstandingly shot film.
Yeah.
The 1917 win,
Yeah, one. Roger Deakins.
Yeah.
Why do you ask? Are the films at all similar?
So I'm thinking, no, other than them being both World War One European films that won a lot of BAFTAs and that have super stylized cinematographies, nah, not really.
And, you know, have an existential tale of the absolute horrors of the First World War and trench warfare. Production design, All Quiet on the Western Front. Okay, I have some thoughts.
Okay.
Production design and All Quiet on the Western Front, and I should say Christian M. Goldbeck, whose production design and the set decoration was Ernestine Hipper. I think it's very good and very detailed and very well rendered version of a real-life historical setting that is very well documented. My problem, it's when people talk about costume or production design, it's like, we have pictures of this real thing. It's more of a recreation than a design.
Mm.
And this isn't to diminish the work that people do, but I think there is, it's like adapted an original screenplay.
When things like 3,000 Years of Longing weren't even nominated,
which is crazy,
it's a bit like... even The Fablemans, Elvis is nominated. Babylon, what's the production design job?
Gorgeous.
There? Yeah.
And Avatar The Way of Water is a weird one because...
It's not a real...
but someone still had to design it.
Fair.
So production design, I'll give it that. Because someone still had to design it even if it's not, even if they didn't have to build it. Elvis, it's kind of the same thing, but I think it does have like a lot of flair. And The Fablemans, the production design... Again, it's historical, but not of a single very famous setting. It's more, you know, Arizona and Northern California in the 1950s and 60s, which isn't that famous a setting. So,
well, I'm wondering whether all of his home movie setups would have counted, would have been built by the production design team, because those were really, really good.
That's true. I hadn't thought of that.
But yeah, so your front runner for this would have been Babylon.
I guess, but I love Babylon.
Yeah. I need to watch it.
I think you'll really like it.
Yeah.
Best sound, Top Gun Maverick, in my opinion, well deserved. That's Mark Weingarten, James H. Mather, Al Nelson, Chris Burden, and Mark Taylor.
Yeah, was Star nominated?
For Best Sound? Mm-hmm. No, which I think is crazy. We've talked about this.
Yeah.
It's crazy Tar wasn't nominated for Best Sound.
But also, like, speaking of makeup and hairstyling being two very different disciplines, the industry was rioting when they merged together sound mixing and editing, because the two departments don't even interact with each other.
No.
But for a televised show, like, most viewers have no idea what the difference between the two is. It's like the contrast of the Oscars between being an industry award and the most popular television commercial award.
Yeah, but production design merges together production design and set decoration, as we've said.
There you go.
So it's there are craft awards, which aren't, you know, as prestigious or as watched as the Oscars, but there are bodies other than the Oscars to make the distinction. You shouldn't set your film tastes by what one awards body deems worthy or distinct. Yeah, I don't know what else I'd give this one to. Actually, I think I'd give it to The Batman, if it wasn't to Top Gun Maverick. And The Batman has a really cool sound design.
The torrential rain that nevertheless still keeps everything audible. It's not overwhelming. It's not like a Nolan movie where you can't hear shit. But Top Gun Maverick, you know, the jet engines and the planes flying and the shooting.
I think you'd have to be looking for an excuse not to give Top Gun Maverick this award.
Yeah.
Having said that, I wouldn't have minded if The Batman won, because I thought the sound design in that is particularly good.
Mm-hmm.
Best original song, Natu Natu from RRR, music by M.M. Keeravani and lyrics by Chandra Bose.
Banger.
Fucking banger. Yeah, love it.
There you go. No need to discuss this one.
Except I do want to ask, of the other ones, do you have any other songs that didn't win that you like?
I do not remember a single one of them.
I think This Is a Life from Everything Everywhere All at Once with David Byrne is very good.
Mm-hmm.
And Lift Me Up, which is Rihanna from Black Panther Wakanda Forever, is also very good.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of them had the cut through and the cultural impact. To a lot of people, Natu Natu was the first images they got of contemporary Indian cinema, and definitely of contemporary Telugu cinema.
Mm.
And I think that opened the doors for a lot of people to discover RRR.
Yeah.
And so I think that if it wasn't just a brilliant song, which it is, and a brilliant sequence in the film, which it is, it would also deserve credit for that.
Yeah, and we already discussed whether this was the best song from RRR to be nominated, but we said that it's the only one that's performed by both the two lead actors.
Yeah.
And has a specific dance number attached to it. It's the most iconic song in the movie.
Which is one of the reasons I wish there was a... Because some people said there should be a best choreography category or there should be a best stunts category. I personally think there should be a best movement category, which combines stunts and dance.
Oh, but then you have the stuntmen and choreographers pull each other's hair, just like the makeup artists and hairstylists and the sound mixers and the sound editors.
Yeah, but as much as I hate to sound like ABC, the show's already 3 hours long. Okay, best original score, All Quiet on the Western Front, Victor Bertelmann. Sure, I mean, there's a score in that, it's very noticeable.
Babylon Was Robbed.
Thank you.
I haven't seen it, as established.
Again, I think Justin Hurwitz should have won for Babylon. And that's got a really amazing score. I did think the Fabelmans would win this, just because it's John Williams, and he seems to be about to retire.
And the main motif of the Fabelmans is very iconic. It's in all the trailers.
But it's not overpowering. But no. Maybe that's why it didn't win.
Huh, there you go. But All Quiet seems to be... I was expecting it to kind of sweep technical categories, but I was expecting it to do much more poorly at the Oscars than it did at the BAFTAs, just by nature of what kind of film it is. It's a BAFTA, darling. It's an Oscars, darling.
Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to skip the short film because I've just not seen any of them.
Yeah. Have you not seen the best documentary short subject?
Or best documentary. All I will say is that I thought All the Beauty and the Bloodshed would win. It's the only one I was hearing stuff about. And then once Navalny won the BAFTAs, I thought, ooh, maybe.
I think that
it had some momentum behind it.
I don't know. I would have liked for someone to go on stage and talk about the absolute state of the healthcare industry in the US. But I guess we get to talk about Russia, which is nevertheless an important subject.
Okay, best international feature film. All Quiet on the Western Front, we've talked about this film. It is international and it is a feature film. All I will say is that it's crazy to me the Indian government didn't nominate RRR to be representative. For those of you that don't know, the way the international feature goes is that every country chooses one film to represent them at the Oscars.
Yeah.
And India didn't choose RRR.
But I don't think there were any contenders here just because... I mean, The Quiet Girl was a film that...
Argentina in 1985 won the Golden Globe.
It did, right. I don't know, I just think All Quiet was the only one among these that got a bunch of other nominations. So that usually means that it's also going to win the Best International Feature Award.
It would have been really cool if The Quiet Girl had won.
It would have been cool.
Because the first, you know, Irish Gaelic film to ever be nominated.
Well, between these and Banshees being snobbed for every category.
A lot of anti-Irish bias from the Jews of Hollywood.
And the Italians as well. Let's not forget that Hollywood is full of Italians.
Full of Italians.
Jesus.
Making films about Italians.
Wish they went back to their country.
Yeah, Green Book, is that the best piece of Italian cinema?
You know what? It's better Italian representation than it's black representation. I'll give it that.
Yeah, at least they got a black guy to play the black guy. Best animated feature film? Okay. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Very much deserved win, in my opinion. We both love this film.
No surprises whatsoever. The only far-fetched reason for which I would have thought it couldn't win, or it could have, you know, missed the win, would have been because it's a Netflix film.
Yeah, but I don't think that people care enough about that.
When, you know, Del Toro is attached to it.
A, when Del Toro is attached to it, and B, when it's not nominated for Best Picture.
Mm.
But it's so interesting, they were okay with Coda, which is an Apple film, winning Best Picture.
Well, Apple hasn't killed the industry.
That's true.
Before That's... Tom Cruise brought it back.
I mean, we love Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, and we've talked about it before.
Yeah, we talked about it. Honestly, go back and listen to our BYW Awards that came out this Sunday. And we talk about a lot of these films. Bar The Sea Beast and Turning Red, which I don't think either of us have seen, but they're also, I don't know, big CGI studio productions. I think they...
Apparently The Sea Beast is really good.
Oh, I think they're both meant to be really good. It's just when you give an award out to Best Animated Film, if you want to count this as Best Use of Animation or Best Film that uses the medium to its advantage, which I know is not what this award is, then it shouldn't go to the biggest studio. It should go to the most interesting and creative and innovative film. And I think among these, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio is for sure the winner.
Yeah. Mm. No, that's fair. Best Adapted Screenplay, Women Talking won. I've seen that. You have... All I want to say about this one is that it depends what you think Best Adapted Screenplay should be. Is it the best screenplay that happens to be from another source, or is it the best use of adaptation?
Well, that's the issue, because some of these nominees aren't adaptations, they're sequels.
That's true. Of those women talking all quiet in the Western Front, Living, I suppose Living is technically an adaptation.
Yeah.
It's an adaptation or a film, not a book, but...
It's on...
And as we... I'm not sure we did say this on the episode. Top Gun, the original Top Gun, is an adaptation. This is a sequel of an adaptation.
We did say this, yeah. It's an adaptation of an article.
Of a magazine article.
Yeah. Which, I mean, really great adaptation work. Too.
From what I understand, this is a pretty unadaptable book, and the fact that the screenplay does work as well as it does, and I think it does work as a screenplay. I've got other problems with that film, but I think the screenplay is pretty good. I think it deserves it, but it's not necessarily my favourite screenplay of the ones on this.
The original event that happened... Happened in a Mennonite colony, I believe in the 2000s, but Mennonites don't speak English, or at least this particular colony didn't speak English. So the book was adapted by a family member, one of the women involved, into English, and then the film itself is a further adaptation of that book. So there's a lot of separation between, I'm assuming... language that was originally used in the events originally happened and how they were then transcribed into the screenplay. But again,
the framing device is still there. The framing device is one of the younger characters in the film telling the story to a character who is not born during the events of the film.
So that kind of justifies the use of translation.
It's not even... It's not mentioned.
Mm.
I honestly, until you said it, I didn't know Mennonites didn't speak English.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's all I really have to say about this. I wonder if I'd have given it to Women Talking. I would probably have given it to Glass Onion, a film I really like the screenplay of.
Again, if we're going by actual adaptations, All Quiet on the Western Front and Living are the only one of these that are actual adaptations. I'm not sure, I don't really have strong opinions about this. I would have given it to Glass Onion, but I am hung up by the fact that it's a sequel, it's not an adaptation, so...
But within the parameters of those rules...
Of this being the best screenplay in this category, Glass Onion is definitely a contender.
Women Talking, Sarah Polley, based on the novel by Miriam Toews, won Best Adapted Screenplay. Okay, Best Original Screenplay... Everything Everywhere All at Once, Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert. We're going to save our talk about this film for the most part because it won a bunch of other awards. But what I will say about it is that a lot of the time the winner of Best Original Screenplay is sort of the more exciting or more original film that doesn't really have a chance of winning Best Picture. It winning Best Original Screenplay felt like more of a certain for me than it winning Best Film or Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it won Best Original Screenplay, but in a normal year, it would be a shoo-in Best Original Screenplay, but wouldn't have a chance at the other ones.
One of the voters got interviewed and published the rationale for voting, and they said that they were going to vote. And they said that they were going to vote for Everything Everywhere because it was the most original screenplay in the category. I'm like, I'm not sure you know what the
criteria
award
need to
means.
Be clearer. it's best original, not most original. Again, I'm very happy it won. I would have probably voted for it, but I would have only voted for it not thinking it would win Best Picture. Knowing that it won Best Picture, I kind of wish Tar had won.
Well, we're going to get to Tar in a minute.
We're going to talk Tar?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Lydia?
We're going to talk about Lydia.
But... I do think that the specificity and the sort of scathingness and even the world building of that screenplay is wonderful and awe-inspiring. So that's very much like my runner-up for that category.
Okay, I'm going to talk about Tar. Lydia Tar didn't get nominated for a single award because she's white.
Okay, moving on.
They nominated Cate Blanchett in her place.
No, they nominated Lydia Tar as Cate Blanchett as Lydia Tar.
Oh, God. The hoops that we have to go through.
As whites.
To win Oscars. Which historically we never won.
Okay. Alright, Che Guevara, calm down.
Che Guevara?
Famous white guy.
Yeah. Okay. Wasn't Hispanic.
No.
No.
That was just Benicio del Toro playing. They didn't have to.
Best supporting actress.
Jamie Lee Curtis for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
To all of the people who have supported the genre movies that I have made for all these years, the thousands and hundreds of thousands of people. We just won an Oscar together!
Okay.
I'm happy she won.
I'm happy she has an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
I would have given it to her for Knives Out over this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a better performance. I really wanted Angela Bassett to win. My problem is that the rationale is, oh, well, it's not really for Everything Everywhere. It's really a Lifetime Achievement Award. You know who has a lifetime full of achievements?
Angela Bassett.
Angela Bassett. Yeah. And not to say that it's more, there are more achievements in her career than in that of Jamie Lee Curtis. But if you've got two people who you believe are equally deserving of a Lifetime Achievement Award, I think then you have to base it on the merits of the performance they are actually nominated for.
Mm-hmm.
In which case, Angela Bassett is the superior performer in this example.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about her as an actor, I'm talking about what is called of her and her character in Wakanda Forever versus Jamie Lee Curtis in Everything Everywhere All at Once, in which she is not even my favourite of the two people nominated in this category from that film.
Yeah.
I think Stephanie Hsu, it would have been amazing if Stephanie Hsu had won.
But Stephanie Hsu, as well as Kerry Condon and Hong Chau, they will have plenty of chances, I hope, to get their award. Especially Kerry Condon.
I mean, I think Kerry Condon has been a sort of breakout of this award season for a lot of people. And we've talked about this on our own award show, but she is, you know, such a wonderful actor, and I hope that more things happen. But also, if an actor doesn't win an Oscar, nothing bad happens to them. Like, it's not, no one needs an Oscar. It's not a human right.
Wow.
Okay. Soapbox over. But yeah, I mean, I'd love it if Stephanie Hsu had won.
I really liked Jamie Lee Curtis's, her speech, all of the actors' all of the actors' speeches were really good.
I don't love that she won, but I did really like her speech. I always like being reminded that she's happily married to Christopher Guest, who is a wonderful director. If you don't know, check out Best in Show.
And I really liked her red carpet interview.
Obviously, I would like to see a lot more women be nominated so that there's gender parity in all the areas and all the branches. And I think we're getting there. We're not anywhere near there. And of course, the inclusivity then that involves the bigger question, which is, how do you include everyone when there are binary choices, which is very difficult. And as the mother of a trans daughter, I completely understand that. And yet, to degender the category also, I'm concerned, will diminish the opportunities for more women, which is something I also have been working hard to try to promote. So it's a complicated question, but I think the most important thing is inclusivity and more women. I mean, basically, just fucking more women anywhere, anytime, all at once.
Yeah. I mean, there are no female nominees for Best Director this year.
Charlotte Wells!
After last year, Jane Campion won. It's crazy.
And it's not like women didn't make films this year. It's just, yeah.
Okay. Best Supporting Actor, Kehi Kwan, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Well-deserved and a wonderful speech. Very moving.
Oh, heartbreaking.
My journey started on a boat. I spent a year in a refugee camp. And somehow, I ended up here on Hollywood's biggest stage.
And if you see him hug Harrison Ford when Everything Everywhere All at Once, spoilers, won Best Picture.
It did?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, you sound so sad about it.
No, I'm very happy about it. I'm just tired. I was up late last night watching the Oscars. Kehi Kwan. Yeah, it felt like a dead cert. I think a few people after Barry Keoghan won the BAFTA for this category were a bit nervous for him because we were all very invested in him winning. But you know what? After the SAG Awards, it was sort of never in any doubt.
And like, I don't know, the BAFTAs, different sensibilities than the Oscars. Makes sense for both Kerry Condon and Barry Keoghan to win there because it's a British film, but it's, you know, as close as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, if it wasn't Kehi Kwan, I'd have loved to see Brendan Gleeson win. I'm a big fan of his.
For sure. Has he won ever?
He's never been nominated before.
Oh, wow. Then it definitely has it a long time coming as well.
Exactly. Judd Hirsch also nominated. I like him.
I was so happy. He's got such a small role, but it's so memorable.
It's a very good role. Yeah. Although I would have actually nominated Seth Rogen over him. And Seth Rogen gives actually such a lovely performance in The Fabelmans.
Yeah, unexpected from him.
Well, have you seen Steve Jobs?
No.
He's actually a very, very good dramatic actor.
Yeah.
And people are always surprised by that, but he's given plenty of good performances. Now, Best Actress.
So you know who was robbed here?
Are you going to say Lydia Tarr?
Andre Risberg for To Leslie.
Okay. Sure. Are you done?
I saw a lot of people on Twitter say that she should have won.
It would have been so funny if she won. I do want to watch this film just out of curiosity, but Yeah, Michelle Yeoh, we're both big fans of her.
Her amazing speech.
For all the little boys and girls who look like me watching tonight, this is the beacon of hope and possibilities. This is proof that dreams dream big and dreams do come true. And ladies, don't let anybody tell you you are ever past your prime.
It's a well-deserved Oscar, not just for her lifetime of outstanding work and contribution to not only cinema, but to women in the arts. Absolutely wonderful that she's won. I think a lot of people weren't sure if it would be Michelle Yeoh or Cate Blanchett. Personally, I thought, again, after the SAG Awards, I was pretty sure she'd win.
I thought Michelle Yeoh was a lock. What did Cate Blanchett win?
She won the BAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
She won the Golden Globe for drama.
Whereas Michelle Yeoh won for comedy
or musical. Yeah. And she won a few other awards.
I see. I don't know. I do think that with Oscar's rationale, I felt like Michelle Yeoh was a fairly safe lock.
Only because Cate Blanchett already had two.
Exactly.
And also possibly because they were getting some flack over Viola Davis and Daniel Detweiler not getting nominated for The Woman King or Till. So giving it to a white woman would have been particularly egregious to a lot of people.
She was the first Asian woman to win the award, which means that for the next at least 7 or 8 years, we're never going to see any more Asian nominees because they've done their job.
Yeah, Michelle, you happy? We call that a champion. okay. But yeah, I mean, Michelle Williams is kind of in the Amy Adams zone of just getting nominated a bunch of times, and she'll probably win for her worst performance ever, despite giving plenty of performances it deserved to win.
She never won.
She's never won. She's been nominated a bunch of times.
Mm.
Just like Amy Adams. Michelle Yeoh, I love you very, very much. You're very dear to me. And everything you do.
And everywhere you do it.
And all the times you do it one time. Oh, fuck it.
That doesn't work.
No, but we'll keep it. But yeah, I mean, it's... The only thing that's crazy to me is this is her first nomination.
Yeah, but considering how many of her roles are not in the English language, how many of them are voice acting roles.
Or in comedies.
Yeah. Which, same with Jamie Lee Curtis, actually. She was in a lot. I think she said that in her speech as well, like all the genre films that I made to get me here. Like she was in a lot of films that would have been considered for the Oscars.
But I do think it's crazy that Michelle Yeoh wasn't nominated for Crouching Tiger. I also think she deserved a Best Supporting Actress nomination for Crazy Rich Asians. And that wouldn't have been out of the realm of possibility. And it's not those are her, necessarily her best performances, but those are the films I think before
would have
this.
Had a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As opposed to, she probably wouldn't have gotten nominated for Supercop, for example, even though I love that film.
Well, that's on the Academy.
Yeah. You slept on Supercop.
You slept on Supercop.
Well, Jackie Chan's never been nominated.
Again, if they had the Best Stunts Award, he would have won it for decades in a row.
Would have been very boring.
Yeah.
Okay, Best Actor. Brendan Fraser, The Whale.
This could have gone either way.
Well, it could have gone one of three ways.
Yeah, because Paul Mescal.
No, I think Farrell, Butler.
No, Farrell, Butler, or Fraser. But
I mean, if Mescal had won, great.
I would have been...
You'd have been very happy.
Like, I would have been floored by the surprise. But it was never going to happen. It was going to be Farrell, Butler, or Fraser. I'm happy with Fraser. I haven't seen The Whale, but just seeing him get on that stage and getting choked up and talking about his history and being so emotional, like it really moved me.
I thank the Academy for this honor and for our studio A24 for making such a bold film. And I'm grateful to Darren Aronofsky for throwing me a creative lifeline and hauling me aboard the good ship The Whale.
All I will say, he seems like a lovely guy. He is a very talented actor. That movie is a piece of shit.
I think that was the most cringe part of the speech.
When he talked about the film he won for.
When he kept reminding us that he won for The Whale. All those like sea metaphors and whale metaphors.
Which is
like,
kind of what the film is, but worse. The film is a worse version of his speech.
So if he wrote the film, he would have made it better.
Would have been 10% more bearable.
Okay.
Hate that film so
and
much.
And 45 seconds long.
I was really hoping this would be Colin Farrell.
Colin Farrell's never won either.
He's never been nominated before.
Yeah. And
a lot of first-time nominees.
Yeah, and I think that...
It's Bill Nye's... I think everyone in this category is their first nomination.
And I think that Brendan Fraser is his first nomination, but also because of a variety of circumstances.
It's his comeback.
But also the first role he's been in that could have feasibly been nominated. Because he hasn't been in anything for the past 20 years, and the films he did before were not Oscar contender films.
Maybe School Ties, actually.
Okay, I haven't seen School Ties.
It's not a particularly good film, but it is. It's kind of a Dead Poets Society-ish thing that kind of deals with anti-Semitism and whatever.
But whereas Colin Farrell...
Maybe more Good Will Hunting than Dead Poets Society, but you get my point.
Whereas Colin Farrell, he has been in a number of Oscar-eligible, at least, performances before.
And deserving.
And deserving, so...
Yeah, so you could argue that if you were to go the Lifetime Achievement route, in terms of great and impressive dramatic performances on a consistent basis, it would That's not why I think Colin Farrell should have won. I think it was generally the best performance of the year.
But do you think vote for Brendan Fraser were a way of making up the Chadwick Boseman, Anthony Hopkins fiasco of last year?
That was 2 years ago.
That was 2 years ago. What was last year?
Last year was Will Smith. Okay, I'm going to keep this in because it demonstrates the fact that everyone forgot
that Will Smith from Best Actor.
Yeah, because to everyone, all that happened with Will Smith last year is that he slapped Chris Rock.
Okay, so, but both of the past couple of years, they've given it to the more long-standing, more seasoned, or with the candidate with the most amount of nominations and the most amount of performances. And in both cases, the first case being that they saved the award for the end of the ceremony and it didn't go to the guy who died. And the second being that he had slapped a man on live TV moments before getting on stage. So this year they were like, okay, we're going to give it to the guy who's going to be nice and who's going to be emotional and who's going to break people's hearts.
But I think that could have been Colin Farrell, who's like a famously lovely guy. I wonder if part of it was the fact that Austin Butler sort of seemed to be steaming ahead post-BAFTAs. And he won the SAG Award, was remembering. I wonder if there was just a feeling of fatigue of his, you know, nonsense.
That he was going to go on stage and do Elvis.
Just that he was just getting a bit annoying.
Yeah.
I think that might have been it. I think he would have won if he was just a normal guy.
He milked the joke a bit too long.
I don't know if it's a joke. That's the problem.
I'm not sure if it's real.
I don't know if it's a joke. I'm happy Brendan Fraser has an award. He seems like a lovely guy, and frankly, these awards are meaningless. However, I don't like that film at all.
Brendan, if you want to be in a good film, contact us. We'll give you opportunities.
Or if you just want to hang out.
Yeah.
You seem like a nice guy.
Just chill. Yeah.
I'd say best performance of the year. What was Colin Farrell? What I meant was best performance of those three of this year. Paul Mescal might have been an even better performance than Colin Farrell, but I don't think he was ever going to win.
No.
Now, moving on to our final two awards. Best Director was won by Daniel Kwan and Daniel Scheinert. Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'm curious what you think about this, just because we spoke a bit off mic about the role of a director in the eyes of the Academy.
This surprised me because Everything Everywhere is clearly such a collaborative effort. It's such a compendium of the post-production and the acting and all of that. But you have to give credit to the director for keeping all of that together.
Well, yeah, because good collaboration is a sign of competent directing.
Exactly, but then where's the line between direction and best picture, which is the production award, right? So it's difficult. I do think that just by just judging the aesthetic qualities of the film and the way it's blocked, which doesn't mean cinematography, it doesn't mean the quality of the photography, it just means the storyboarding and planning that went into then the cinematographer's and the editor's work, which is the director's job. A lot of that is very ambitious because it's a compendium of so many different styles. But we talked about this in our BYW Awards episode. A lot of those styles, or most of those styles, aren't very original in and of themselves. They are aping or homaging other things. And if anything, I think this film is better than the sum of its parts. Like, if you take one scene out of it, I don't think it's mind-blowing. It's how they coalesce together.
Yeah. It's a movie that shouldn't work. Mm-hmm. And it's a movie that won Best Picture.
Yeah.
It's crazy this won Best Picture. I'm very happy. My thoughts are that in a lot of ways, Best Director is Best Picture, but without the rank choice. So it goes to what would probably have won Best Picture without rank choice.
We also have the nominees.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And I don't know, I just think that this year, this category kind of stings, not because of Daniel Swan, but because Charlotte Wells and Jordan Peele were nominated. And that is, especially in a year where all the nominees are white men, not to make it about identity politics necessarily, but we were just talking about the Jane Campion effect. And you have two of the objectively best directions of the year being done by a woman and by a black director, you're catching two birds with one stone by awarding people who deserve it and getting some brownie points for diversity.
Well, Gina Prince-Bythewood directed The Woman King fantastically, and she wasn't nominated. Yeah, it's... I'm curious when the last time a directing team won. Joel Coen and Ethan Coen for No Country for Old Men in 2007.
Yeah, no surprise.
But it's another... Yeah. It's, you know... Again, I'd have loved Todd Field to have won this. I think Tar is also a very well-directed film, in spite of the odds.
I mean, he was marred by his association with Lydia.
That's true. Yeah. She did sort of drag him down. I love you, Lydia, but you did drag him down. Also, it's so weird. You remember when she, like, shoved and, like, rugby tackled... Chris Rock at the last Oscars.
Yeah, but to be fair, Chris Rock was wearing a terrible wig. I would have done the same.
So stupid. So stupid. And Best Picture, Everything Everywhere, All at Once. So that kind of brings us to the end of it. I'm very happy it won.
I am not surprised that only won Best Picture. Unlike Best Director. I thought that was more of a toss-up. Best Picture was pretty much in the lock.
I don't know many people who didn't like it somewhere. I know some people who were underwhelmed by it. I know some people who liked it and didn't love it. But I don't know anyone who disliked it other than my dad, who just doesn't get on with any sci-fi.
So you disliked it because of the sci-fi elements?
We stopped watching about 20 minutes in as soon as Kay Kwan starts to do the multiverse stuff.
That's before the film even starts.
Yeah. So... But that is the closest I've come to someone who has watched it and dislikes it, is someone that gave up 20 minutes in.
So he... Was he liking it until that point?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, that makes sense then.
I think like he was kind of on board, and then like as soon as it went like sci-fi, he wasn't...
Mm-hmm.
I watched it again, though, with my brother all the way through, and he really liked it.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a film that kind of has the achievement of bringing together both casual film viewers and film snob.
And also introducing a whole... new group of people to the work of one of the most important actors of Asian cinema.
I do have some hang-ups about the film. I don't think it's a perfect film. No. It's not my favourite of the year.
But would you like it as much if it was a perfect film?
Well, it'd be perfect by that point.
No, but...
And I hate perfection, I said to myself.
Which is obviously a reference to our Moulin Rouge episode.
I mean, I think it is about time to tease out the fact that we're going to do a mainline episode in a couple of weeks with David from Piecing It Together podcast, talking about Everything Ever All at Once and Three Alternates. So we're going to go into more depth about the screenplay and the direction in there for sure. If I have one hang-up about the film is that it has some really amazing one-off gags that then it milks for minutes and minutes on end. And it's a film that's quite long. I feel like it could have trimmed a few of the jokes to make them snappier and more one-off instead of milking them. But, like, really, like that's a nitpick. It's not sure. Meant to be a, you know, deconstruction of the film that just won every fucking award ever.
I will say that we started doing this podcast... The first episode came out 17th of May 2022. But we had started working on it before last year's Oscars.
That's true.
Because I remember us reacting to Coda winning. And we started like planning this in February of last year. So there is something like quite fun about knowing that, oh, we've been at least working on this for over a year now. And that we're able to do an Oscars episode.
And we're going to be here next year to comment on Cocaine Bear winning Best Picture 2024.
Please God.
Unless Plane takes it.
I think it's a toss.
Like January films, mate. But Everything Everywhere, honestly, we're going to talk more about it in a future episode. We talked about it in very positive and endearing terms in our BYW Awards episode, where it might have won some awards there as well. Who knows? Go find out.
I'm just glad All Quiet on the Western Front didn't win, because I think that is an aggressively fine film.
It wasn't going to win when it was also nominated for Best International Feature. Not at the Oscars.
Parasite?
True, but Parasite didn't really have any contenders.
For Best Picture?
Yeah.
I'm going to look that up.
I remember thinking Parasite was the only one that could have won, but I was surprised it won because it's like, what, the subtitles?
Americans can't read?
Yeah, exactly.
2019. No, Parasite beat Ford v Ferrari. Okay, wasn't going to... wasn't going to win.
Yeah.
The Irishman.
Netflix.
Oh, good point.
Uh-huh.
Jojo Rabbit wasn't going to win. Joker wasn't going to win. Little Women. Maybe, but didn't have a Best Director nom.
Yeah, I didn't win much else either.
Marriage Story, Netflix.
Mm.
1917, possibly, did win the BAFTA.
1917, it reminds me of another film that was nominated this year, but I can't put my finger on it.
And Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I suppose you're right.
There was no front-runner for that, and people did really like Parasite.
Yeah. Also, Parasite beating 1917, I think, is more akin to Everything Everywhere beating All Quiet.
So what you're saying is Asians are coming here and stealing our awards.
They're stealing our awards based on World War One films.
Our entire culture.
Just reminiscing about the war.
The entire European culture is just obsession with World War One and World War Two.
And how sad it was, how horrible it was, but for some reason, all the fucking war glorifiers jump on these films, despite the fact that they're not about it. Stop watching films, everyone. You're ruining them.
If you want to hear us talk more about the winner of this year's Best Picture Oscar, stick around for our full-length episode on Everything Everywhere All at Once, in which we'll get more into it. We don't want to spoil it all right away. And also, we've been recording for an hour now.
Mm-hmm. And the episode is going to be called Because You Watched Everything Everywhere All at Once. Just in case someone clicks on this and doesn't know who we are.
Okay, fine. All right. Well, thank you for listening. As always, our producer is Jade Corbett. Our art is done by Molecule. You can follow us online at BCU Watch Pod on Twitter, at BCU Watch Podcast on Instagram. I've been Charlie.
I say thank you, Francesco. It's the Oscars episode.
I want to thank Francesco, my co-host.
I want to thank Charlie, my mom, and my greatest inspiration, Lydia Tarr.
And thank you for listening.
We want to dedicate this to the mommies, all the mommies of the world, to our moms. Specifically, my mom and dad, Ken and Becky, thank you for not squashing my creativity when I was making really disturbing horror films or really perverted comedy films or dressing in drag as a kid, which is a threat to nobody.